Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Glad to have you tuned in to Connecting Faith. Welcome. I'm Neil Stavem. I always enjoy the opportunity to get together and have a good conversation. Today, I think, will be especially helpful and useful. I hope so. Ted Ross at the controls and Carissa's at the phones. And we're going to talk feedback today, Ted. Not the kind you get in your microphone and the ears.
The high-pitched feedback.
No, that not. Although, you know, we probably had some that kind of has been a little high-pitched and just as annoying. But I was trying to think of, you know, interesting or maybe memorable feedback I've gotten. I remember back in college being in the concert band, and after having a somewhat of a little solo piece, one of the fellow band members told me afterwards, he said, you know, that was really good, Neil. I don't know why people say all those bad things about you. So
backwards compliment.
Sure,
if there
that
ever was one.
Yeah, that was my foray into feedback. We're going to talk about a wonderful book, a great resource, of which we have four copies, by the way. So you'll want to sign up for this. We do a drawing at the end of the hour when we have resources to give away. And so you can queue up for that and join in the conversation through the phone number, toll-free, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We're going to talk about a new book called Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. But Ted, there's a little asterisk there, and the bottom line says, even when it's off base, unfair, poorly delivered, and frankly, you're not in the mood.
Ooh, so, challenging.
So, yes, I'm sure that we've all been there at some point or another. This is written by our guest today. She co-authored this with Douglas Stone, Sheila Heen. Douglas Stone spent the last 15 years working with corporations, nonprofits, governments, and families to determine what helps us learn and what gets in our way. Sheila is founder of the Triad Consulting Group. She's a lecturer on law at Harvard Law School, and she has been working in the area of negotiations. In fact, Douglas and Sheila co-wrote a book here about 10, 15 years ago called Difficult Conversations. And she was also one of the key speakers at the Global Leadership Summit this past summer, where I had an opportunity to hear her and thought definitely want to get her on the air with us. So, Sheila, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, I'm delighted to be here.
And we should we could just mention that you have some Midwest roots, so we're claiming you as our own, even though you're hanging out in the East Coast.
I know. I'm only visiting here. It's been a 20-plus year visit, but honestly, I'm from Iowa, grew up in Nebraska, my dad's from Minnesota, and I spend part of every summer in Wisconsin, so you may hear a little bit of it in my voice now and there.
Well, we just, you know, what it says right away is that you just got lots of common sense, so, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you're... Thank you for that. That's what I keep telling these East Coasters.
Sure, they just don't get it. Well, that's part of the difficult conversation, isn't it? And that's a whole other topic, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
So, thanks for the feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback. Well, I was thinking maybe just as an initial question, how is feedback different from criticism? Because that seems like there's maybe kind of a fine line sometimes.
Well, I don't think that there's a fine line, actually. I think there's no line, sadly.
Okay.
So criticism is feedback poorly delivered in a lot of ways. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting about feedback is that it's often offhand comments or sort of passive-aggressive comments or, you know, hey, Bill does it this way. And you're thinking, wait, is that feedback? Like, good for Bill. Are you talking to me? And so one of the really interesting things about feedback, which really is all of the information in the world about you or about the way you're impacting other people, is that part of the challenge is figuring out, is it feedback? Do you have something that you want to talk to me about?
Well, and maybe we just need to define that a little bit more. And the fact that I guess we is let's find out, is it something that we need? I mean, is it innate that we have to have it, or we don't want it? And what happens if we don't get it?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, there are two answers to that question, perhaps. One is we get it whether we want it or not, right? Mm-hmm. Between grades in school and coaching from our parents, and then you go to work and everybody has an agenda for you, and then you become a parent and everyone has those little unsolicited parenting tips. Whether you want it or not, we kind of swim in an ocean of feedback. But I would also say that we do need it, and we need it for a couple of reasons. One is it's really the primary way that we learn and grow as human beings and in our relationships with other people. And I would also say that it's one of the ways that we grow spiritually, so not just professionally and personally. But better understanding ourselves and better understanding God's love, I think, really comes from our relationships with other people.
The book of references is called Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. And you put the emphasis on the receiver a lot in this, don't you? I mean, it seems like most of the maybe conversation that or things when we think about feedback, we think about, well, we have to give it, we have to deliver it better. But you suggest that the receiver really is the key.
Yeah, and you know, we took a little too long to realize that ourselves. You know, in the work world in particular, all of the commentary is about how to give feedback. Managers are brought in and given seminars on how to give feedback more effectively. And, you know, there's a lot to learn that will help you be more skillful or more clear or more persistent when you're giving. And we were doing that work ourselves when eventually one day it occurred to us that actually in any exchange of feedback between giver and receiver, it's actually the receiver who's in charge. It's the receiver who decides, you know, what they're going to let in and what sense they make of it and whether and how to choose to change. And we suddenly thought, gosh, maybe we've been going about this backwards. Maybe the real leverage here is in understanding better why it's so hard for us to receive everybody else's feedback as human beings.
And it is hard, just particularly, I guess, when you had a little sidebar in the book that talks about, you know, there's no shortage of vitriolic feedback, you know, with you know, Facebook and all these, and even, you know, I suppose Dancing with the Stars or any of these other things. I mean, it's just, how do we learn to ignore the bad and take the good?
Yeah, and one of the challenging things about online feedback is that it is often only tangentially related to you, right? So you post a blog or a photo, et cetera, and people react to it. And they're reacting not just to what you're posting, they're reacting to things going on in their own life. And so thinking about, okay, so what's wrong with this feedback? But then also what might be right about it can help you sort through to think, okay, what can I safely set aside? But what should I maybe think about or start learning from will help you sort out what might be valuable, even when the feedback is mostly off base or unfair or poorly delivered.
And those three are probably way too common, right? Off base, unfair, and poorly delivered.
Yeah, you must have the same givers in your life that I have in my life.
Well, I would say I resemble that remark probably, and you know, the rest of the staff would say that too. So probably yes.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I mean, I hear a lot of people saying things like, you know, gosh, I just wish I got more feedback, but my boss doesn't have time, or, you know, he's terrible at it, or he's difficult himself. And, you know, a mentor who's really gifted, a mentor or coach who's really wonderful at giving feedback is something to be treasured. But if we're going to wait around for the perfect givers to come along, we're going to be waiting an awful long time to learn anything. And I guess part of the work for me around understanding how to receive is also empowering us to take charge of and accelerate our own learning. I mean, if you're determined to learn, nobody can really stop you. Right? It doesn't have to come from your boss, your coworkers and your customers and all those, you know, seek out the people who are good at whatever it is you're trying to get better at. And usually they're happy to help you.
So you do lay out some feedback triggers and suggest there are kind of three main triggers. Let's set that up and then we'll come back and dive into those a little bit more deeply as we go along.
Okay. So, you know, when we started working on this project to just better understand what's so hard about receiving, we started by thinking about ourselves and then talking to people about why they rejected feedback. And what became clear pretty quickly was that as human beings, we have three kinds of triggered reactions when we get feedback. Truth triggers, relationship triggers, and identity triggers. So truth triggers are all about the feedback itself. Is it right or is it wrong? Would it work? Is it good advice? Does it really understand the situation that we're in? So it's all about assessing the quality of the substance of the feedback. Relationship triggers are actually about who's giving you the feedback, because feedback always comes wrapped in the relationship within which it's given, and often we'll have a bigger reaction to the who than we do to the what. And this is why your best friend can tell you things that nobody else can, but it's also why sometimes we will reject feedback from a spouse, right, when a stranger could tell us the same thing and we suddenly see, hey, that's actually really interesting, even though our spouse has been telling us the same thing, right, for 5 years. Finally, identity triggers have to do with the story we tell about who we are in the world and also our particular wiring, our sensitivity to feedback. One of the most interesting things for me was learning that individual sensitivity to feedback, in terms of how upset you get and how long it takes you to recover, can vary by up to 3,000%. It really helps me understand why some people, you know, you have to hit them over the head to even get their attention, while others are devastated by, you know, what seem to other people to be very small pieces of feedback.
So are we predisposed to maybe lean on one of those triggers more than another? Or, I mean, do we all have elements of those?
I suspect that we all have elements of them. It's a really interesting question to think, well, what's my go-to trigger for rejecting feedback? What's interesting is that as human beings, I think we're really incredibly good at wrong spotting. So when feedback is incoming, we're scanning for what's wrong with it. So I'm looking for, like, okay, you know, what they're saying isn't true, who gave it to me, why they gave it to me, where they gave it to me, when they gave it to me, how they gave it to me. And if you listen to people reacting to upsetting feedback, that's what they'll be talking about. Because if we can figure out what's wrong with it, well, then I can safely set it aside and relax and, you know, go on with my life, ego intact. If there's something right about it, I have to keep worrying about it. And so I think we're really good at wrong spotting and actually dismissing feedback pretty quickly, or in the dark of night lying awake worrying that maybe it's all true about us. We're not very good at sorting through just to more deeply understand the feedback and decide what is useful to us and then letting go of the rest of it.
Coming up in a moment, we'll talk a little bit more about how we can get to moving from you're wrong to tell me more. And we're learning about feedback today. Thanks for the Feedback is the title of the book, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. And there's a little asterisk subtitle says, even when it's off base, unfair, poorly delivered, and frankly, you're not in the mood. Well, I hope that you are in the mood to hear some wise counsel about feedback today. We'll continue our conversation with Sheila Heen in just a moment. Sheila is founder of the Triad Consulting Group and a lecturer in law at Harvard Law School. And she has worked with a number of major businesses, as well as nonprofits, individuals, and ministries. She and her co-author, Douglas Stone, also wrote Difficult Conversations, which was a bestseller some years ago, and she's appeared on a number of media outlets and was a part of the Global Leadership Summit this past summer and had an opportunity to hear there. And we've got some copies to give away of the book, and I know that you're going to want to have a resource like this, especially if you're in a position where you... Well, actually, all of us need it because we all are receivers. But if we're involved in giving feedback, this will be helpful as well. And you can sign up for a free copy and join us with a question. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. More with Sheila Heen in a moment. About the science and art of receiving feedback well. That's the subtitle to the new book called Thanks for the Feedback, written by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen. They've also co-authored the book called Difficult Conversations, and much of the insights kind of grown out of that study, as Sheila and Doug have worked together with a variety of major business corporations, nonprofits, governments, and families to determine what helps us learn and what gets in our way. And we know that we need to receive feedback to learn and grow. So how do we receive it well, even when it may not be delivered well or unfair or off base? Sheila is founder of the Triad Consulting Group and a lecturer of law at the Harvard Law School, and talking with us today. So, you know, not all feedback is the same. We talked about three triggers, but there's also, three kinds of feedback, right, Sheila? Let's talk about those.
Yeah, I think we toss around this word feedback when we're actually talking about some quite different kinds of things. So we talk about three types of feedback, and each has a different purpose. The easy way to remember them is ACE, A-C-E. The first is appreciation. So appreciation just says, like, I see you, I get you, you matter to me, I notice the sacrifices that you're making or how hard you're working. Sometimes when people say, I wish I got more feedback around here, what they mean is, you know, I wish somebody noticed that I work here. The second is coaching. Coaching is anything that's aimed to help you get better at something. So it includes, you know, asking you questions, the sort of executive coaching that has become popular in the business world that helps sort of use elicitive conversation to help people to learn. But it also includes advice, suggestions, mentoring, correction. If the purpose is to help you improve or to learn, it counts as coaching. And then the last one is evaluation. Evaluation assesses, rates, or ranks you based on some standard expectations. So obviously grades are evaluation. But, you know, so is the question like, okay, is this room clean enough? When I told you to go clean your room, did you do a good enough job? I have a standard that I'm trying to teach you about what it means to do a good job. So what's interesting is that evaluation, being judged, is the most emotionally loud, and so it can actually drown out the other two. And often when we mean to coach, we end up judging. You asked at the top of the hour about criticizing, and criticizing is often someone intending to coach but ending up judging, saying, you know, you're not up to snuff, there's something wrong with you. This work has actually changed the way that I parent in a couple of key ways, including how we talk about grades. You know, I think often kids hear, you know, not good enough or you're not good enough, when what we really mean when they bring home what I refer to as my son's rainbow report card, one of every grade, you know, what he needs is coaching, not criticism or judgment. And so it's really changed the way we talk about those report cards, where we say, okay, so now what is this, whatever, honors biology grade or math grade telling you about how you want to approach this subject differently? What's your coaching for yourself? And we have that conversation instead. It's definitely lowered the temperature on those conversations.
We, I guess we're talking about grades in school. I mean, there's been lots of effort over the last couple decades about self-esteem, right? That we're much better at affirming, I guess, right? That everybody's doing well, whether they really are or not.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that I don't think kids are fooled. What Carol Dweck at Stanford would say is that when we keep reassuring kids like, oh, you're very smart, oh, you're so talented, oh, you're so good at music, we're actually reinforcing what she would call a fixed mindset. That means that if they make mistakes or don't do well, then they must not be smart or talented, rather than, you know, you're always learning, what she would call a growth mindset, which is we're all just learning the next thing and working on the next thing. Whether that means as a kid, you know, struggling and you're going to be able to, with hard work, conquer math, or as a leader, you know, like I got to work on my next thing because it's a lifelong process of growth.
You referred to, you were talking about, you know, cleaning the room. Is it up to my standard? We all have a standard of measure, but we've all received maybe generic feedback or given generic feedback. It's so generic, it's not really useful. How do we maybe receive that and give more specifics?
Yeah, this is one of the real challenges of assessing whether feedback is true or useful or not, which is that it's usually offered as these really vague, what we call labels. And by the way, we're guilty of this when we give, as well as struggling with it when we receive. In other words, when I think of somebody in my life who I would like to give feedback to, the headline in my head is, I just need them to be more whatever, and there's a word there. I just need them to be more responsible or, you know, succinct or humble or something. And so what happens is I offer that one-word assessment. Now, that word means a whole bunch of actual behavior or the impact I see their lack of humility having on the people around them. But because I'm not more specific about, okay, when I say you need to be more humble, where's that coming from? What have I watched you do? Or what have I seen in terms of the impact that it's having on the people around you that concerns me? Or where is that feedback going? Your feedback always has a past and a future, somewhere that it's coming from that leads somebody to give it to you, and somewhere it's going in terms of what they hope you will do differently. So, you know, here is my suggestion. I think you should ask a couple of questions before you agree or disagree in the meetings. That would be an example of specific advice that would help you be seen by me anyway as more humble. That's what I, as your giver, mean by it. When we're on the receiving end, you actually have to help your givers by asking those questions because it's not going to occur to them that you don't know exactly what they mean.
So actually, using those words, where is this coming from or where is this going? Something like that?
Something like that. The one of the challenges with the question, where is this coming from, is that often what we mean is, which of your personality disorders is this coming from? Right?
Sure.
Like, which of your problems is this feedback coming from? So maybe modify it a little bit just to ask, so can you say more about what you saw me do or maybe that I failed to do, or what did you expect me to do in that situation that would have been different? That will help me understand what you noticed that, or what you're concerned about. Or for the going to, you know, well, gosh, if I was going to take your advice, I haven't decided yet, but if I was going to take your advice, what is it that I would do differently? That is often a very efficient question because it will cut to the heart of what they mean pretty quickly.
Getting some good insight on feedback, not only how to give it, but maybe more importantly, how to receive it, because there are some things that trigger the way we receive it, some filters. We want to learn more about, not just assuming that they're wrong, but we want to hear more because we do want to learn and grow. So we're going to talk about maybe if there's some ways that we can rewire our thinking, our brain patterns that way. Getting good insight on this from Sheila Heen. Sheila is founder of the Triad Consulting Group and a lecturer in law at Harvard Law School. Her husband teaches negotiation at MIT, and they're both schooled regularly in negotiation by their three kids, age 7, 11, and 14. And she's co-written this book, Thanks for the Feedback, with Douglas Stone. Together they have worked with corporations and nonprofits and governments and families. And we invite you to join the conversation and at least sign up for a copy of the book. We've got four copies of the book, Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. And you can do that by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. If you have a question about feedback, if you want to give us some feedback, we're probably not in the mood, but you can sure give us a call anyway, 877-933-2484. More with Sheila Heen in just a moment. Hearing those internal voices, that's part of feedback, isn't it? When we get it, right away our defenses go up, the emotions get involved. We're learning about receiving feedback well. There's a science and an art to that. That's the subtitle of the new book from Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen called Thanks for the Feedback. And then the little asterisk that says, even when it's off base, unfair, poorly delivered, and frankly, we're not in the mood. And maybe you've been in all of those spots a time or two getting the feedback. Getting some wise advice on it, though, with Sheila Heen and her and her husband. Actually, their children are are in the a couple of years older than I have in my bio. So the oldest is driving, and Sheila, as you were mentioning, that the 16-year-old is actually open to feedback as opposed to the previous few years, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's been actually quite a refreshing and lovely experience because he's eager to ride along. He's eager to chat and interested in advice and asking questions. And, teenagers are not always that way.
No.
It's been a while since he's been that eager and receptive.
Well, let's hang on to that as long as you can, I guess. But, one of the things we've sort of touched on is that, is this all about sort of just lowering the emotion? If we want to get to the place where we can react with tell me more instead of you're wrong, is it just a matter of lowering emotion? We talked about the labels, asking clarifying questions. Is it because we have blind spots and we just don't realize that people are well intentioned most of the time?
Yeah, it's all of those reasons. It's such an interesting and complicated set of reactions. So I think that part of it is just understanding and noticing your own reaction and the fact that you're having a triggered reaction, not letting that be the end of the story, but helping it be maybe the beginning of the story and deciding for yourself, rather than decide if this feedback is right or wrong from the get-go, first I'm just going to try to better understand it. And I don't have to agree with it, but I just have to understand what is it that they see that I don't see. Because blind spots are tricky. Everybody else has information about us that we don't have about, our facial expressions and body language and tone of voice and the way they understood what we were doing so that they walked away very upset. That's often invisible to us. So we actually need them to see ourselves accurately. But, of course, it's upsetting to hear that we have hurt someone else or that there are impacts that we're having that we don't realize. So we also have to be open to the idea that we're not walking around in the world as perfectly as we might think that we are or want to.
I think you refer to talking about taking a step back. Would you say we need to take three steps back? Say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, there are some situations where it's not just that people have feedback for us in our relationships. There are some situations where the relationship itself is actually producing the feedback, and it's often producing feedback in both directions. In other words, if you and I are having trouble working together or living together or whatever, being neighbors, we each feel like the other person is the one who needs to change. Like, we wouldn't be having this problem if you weren't so fill in the blank. If you weren't so messy, if you weren't so irresponsible. And, of course, you feel like we wouldn't be having this problem if I weren't so, overwrought and anal about being tidy, or if I wasn't so overreactive. And so, actually, the feedback in the relationship is being produced by the combination of you plus me. And just understanding that relationship system, the first step back is just saying, okay, what is the difference between us that means that we're having trouble in reacting to each other? And then you take another step back and ask, well, so sometimes the roles that we're in exacerbate that. Meaning, if you're in sales and I'm in delivery, our roles put us a little bit in tension because you're incented to make the sale and, I would say, oversell. And I have to figure out how to actually deliver it when you would say I drag my feet. So part of it is just our roles and responsibilities are actually making it harder. And then the third step back often just looks at, so what else is in the environment that makes it harder? If we don't work together face-to-face, but we're working virtually across geographies, that alone can actually exacerbate conflict between us, for instance.
I think you refer to sometimes we switch track conversations. Our defenses, so we make it about the who instead of the what, I think you said.
Yeah, so switch tracking is probably the most common way that feedback conversations go off the rails, which is that someone offers feedback, and the person on the receiving end has a triggered reaction, and without even realizing they're doing it in many cases, they change the topic of the conversation. So, for instance, by the way, this happened to me recently where for 3 weeks, I had actually been switch tracking, and I didn't even realize I was doing it, despite the fact that I wrote a book about it. So I would come to pick up my son at one of his many sports activities, and he would say, "You're late." And because I'm a professional feedback receiver, I would say, "Don't talk to me that way." Now, it's a perfectly reasonable response for me to have, but I'm actually changing the subject. He's giving me feedback that I'm late. He's probably been standing outside. He's been waiting. He's got a lot of homework to do. Maybe it's raining. It's true that I'm late, actually, but I'm changing the subject to how he's giving me the feedback. And it's not that one is more important than the other. It's that now we're just talking past each other, and we're arguing about whose topic is more important. And this happens all the time. You know, your numbers are really down. Really? You're telling me this the day before I leave on vacation? Seriously? You know, or really? You're telling me this by text? So often our triggered reaction means we change the subject to how they gave us the feedback, when or where they gave us the feedback, or, you know, really? You're worse at this than I am. Who are you to say? So the problem then becomes that we have two topics on the table, and we really need to just identify that we have two topics and give each topic its own track so that we can talk about both topics but not mix them together.
And is there a standard sort of simple way in which to do that? To, I mean, obviously we need to sort of recognize this in just a matter of seconds, right? Because we're sort of wired to go off in the direction that we've been doing for years, right? We grew up in that kind of environment, and we're keeping it on with our kids and or office mates or whatever.
Yeah, and so often, if we're the initial giver, occasionally we'll realize it's happening because what we hear is that the other person is making excuses or getting defensive, because that's how it appears to the original feedback giver. So they'll realize you're changing the subject. That's not what we're talking about right now. But the main advice is, if you're going in circles or you start to get an inkling, you say, "Okay, hold on. I think we have two topics on the table." It's as simple as that. You know, you want to talk about, you know, how my numbers are going. I'm happy to talk about that. I also want to talk about when you decided to give me this feedback. So once we wrap up the first topic, I want to talk about the second. And it's just as simple as actually transparently naming it.
Did you finally get to that point with your son in the example you gave?
Yes, and then I told him that my topic was more important.
Okay. Because you're the mom. I mean, that's, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
He didn't buy that at all, by the way.
It sounds solid to me, though, I got to tell you, Sheila. So.
Thank you. Parents across the country are agreeing with me.
Sure. We're talking with Sheila Heen. The book is called Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. We've got some copies to give away, and you can join in the conversation if you like it well. And sign up for the book at 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. You know, change isn't easy. So even if we accept feedback, it doesn't necessarily mean that we can or will change for the better. So is there a point where we just sort of have to find a balance between saying, well, you know, I can't change, or, here's something I really need to improve on?
Yeah, that is such an important question. And isn't it interesting that when we're on the giving side and we have a suggestion for someone else, it just doesn't seem that complicated. You know, like, just be on time. But when we're on the receiving end, even small changes, we have a very rich sense of how much time, attention, and effort that's going to take. And frankly, it may not be the most important thing you need to work on. So a couple of thoughts. Number one, you really can only work on one or two things at a time, which is why we actually suggest asking for one thing. What's one thing I'm doing or failing to do that you think is getting in my way? Or what's one thing you would suggest that I change? You're with that question, you're more likely to get something concrete and something that you can think about. Okay, well, that's a priority for this person, so let me think about that. The second is something we haven't talked about yet, which is boundaries. Because I think sometimes we're in relationships where the criticism is so unrelenting that it's starting to undermine your sense of self. And you actually, a healthy response is to say no to feedback. Either, "I'm not going to take your advice. I listened to it, but I'm actually deciding not to pursue it, at least not right now. Or I actually don't even want to hear it. Like, I just need to get on my feet myself as a new parent, or in this new job. And I just need everybody to keep their opinions for yourself while I figure out what I can figure out. Then at some point, I'll let you know. I'll be ready for your ideas and suggestions.
Should we, though, be inviting someone into our lives to coach us, to hold us accountable, I mean, to give us feedback? Is that a position that we ought to take?
I think for many of us, it's very, very helpful. And by the way, you kind of don't have a choice sometimes. Certainly, what we, those of us who are married, learn is that that person somehow has appointed themselves as the person who holds us accountable. And so I do think, though, that inviting particular people to help us keep commitments to ourselves that are important to us, like, I really am working on this. Can you call me out on it? Can you let me know when I'm doing it? Because I often am not even aware that I'm, you know, being dismissive or interrupting someone else or et cetera. Having a friend who can help you, coach you through that, I think is really an amazing gift.
So do the people that need it the most get it the least? So, you know, so the higher up in the organization you go, the CEO or, you know, the president, I mean, it seems like, you know, there's fewer and fewer people that are maybe allowed into that circle.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things in organizations, which is the more senior you get, the less and less candid coaching you get. Sometimes what happens is that the people at the top get lots of appreciation, like, oh, thank you so much for spending your time with us, et cetera. And sometimes, particularly in public companies, they get lots of evaluation. You know, Wall Street thinks this, and the analysts think this, and so-and-so is doing a good or bad job. But they get almost no candid coaching about the impact their leadership is having on the rest of their leadership team or on their colleagues or peers. And so it's this funny thing where actually the more senior you are, the harder you have to work to get meaningful and helpful coaching, even though your behavior has more of an impact than ever on everybody else.
Thanks for the feedback is the book title. Sheila Heen is my guest. Sheila's founder of Triad Consulting Group and a lecturer of law at Harvard Law School. And she and her co-author, Douglas Stone, have also written a best-selling book called Difficult Conversations. And together they work with corporations and nonprofits and governments and families to determine what helps us learn and what gets in our way. And we're learning the science and art of receiving feedback well. We'll take a quick break and come back and talk more about ways in which we can receive it better, we can continue to grow, and there's some thoughts about our faith as well. How do we receive maybe God's feedback to us and lowering the emotion perhaps of those things? We'll get to all that and more. And take your questions as well, 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Feedback today, and oftentimes the focus is on how we give it, which we all need help in that area, but this book that we're referencing is talking about how to receive it, the science and art of receiving feedback well. That's the subtitle of a new book called Thanks for the Feedback, written by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen. They've also co-written the book called Difficult Conversations. They're part of the Harvard Negotiation Project, and Sheila is founder of the Triad Consulting Group and spends time working with businesses and nonprofits and ministries as well. Was speaker at the Global Leadership Summit this past summer at Willow Creek and presented some great information on that. And we talked a little bit, Sheila, about maybe feedback from you know, reading God's Word or inviting someone else into our lives to disciple us, help us grow in our faith. You know, Romans 12:3 sort of came to mind as I was thinking about, you know, strategies for self-feedback. Don't think of yourselves more highly than you ought to think. How do we in terms of maybe spiritual application, receive feedback more helpful, more positively?
You know, one of the things that really has influenced my perspective on this is a relationship, actually, a friendship that I have with a Catholic theologian. And she's the person who first said to me a number of years ago, I had been helping her, coaching her through a tough work relationship that she was in. And, you know, this has been going for months. And one day over lunch, she said to me, I'm just so thankful for this person, this difficult person. And I said, really? Say more about that. And she said, you know, I just have learned so much about myself. And I said, okay, like what? And she said, well, for instance, I used to think that I was a very magnanimous person. Now I'm realizing that maybe I'm not as magnanimous as I thought I was. But the she first introduced me to the idea that a lot of what we are called to do and to be as Christians, to reflect God's love with each other, to, you know, forgive each other and love each other even when it's not easy, that plays out. And we're challenged and given the opportunity to grow in that direction in some of our most challenging relationships. So for me, feedback really is part and parcel of that Christian walk and journey, as well as just our professional success, of course, on the secular side.
We tend to, when we get maybe negative feedback, we tend to look for reassurance, don't we? Is that a bad thing? You know, and I suppose the danger is that we become gossips if it's you know, bad feedback at work or something.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing, but it just needs to not be the end of the story. So when we get feedback that's really upsetting or devastating, particularly if we're sensitive, part of what is hard is that that one mistake or that one piece of feedback gets sort of supersized, and it becomes the whole story about who we are. In the most extreme cases, we can fall into what we call the Google bias. It's as if you're mentally and emotionally Googling everything that's wrong with me. And, of course, you get 8 million hits, all your past mistakes and misjudgments and failed relationships and their sponsored ads from your father or your ex. And it's a bias because you're not Googling things you're handling reasonably well. Then you start to have a more balanced perspective. So part of what happens when we are devastated is that we go to our friends for reassurance. And we ask them to join us in pointing out all the things that are wrong with the feedback and why actually they're crazy. They don't know what they're talking about. You know, you're great. And that actually helps us get back on our feet. But then I think we need to ask our friends to help us with a second question when we're ready, which is, what might be right about it? Is there anything that I, now that I can see it at actual size, that I should actually pay attention to and start thinking about, which is maybe an opportunity to grow?
One of our callers asked, said, you know, if someone has, you know, chocolate on their face or, you know, broccoli in their teeth, shouldn't we let them know about it? I mean, how do we, you know, maybe about what's our responsibility to point things out to people?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, please do give them the gift of letting them know. I have been the victim of having gotten up in front of people and talked, and then I walk out and realize my fly was unzipped and no one told me. So when we try to treat others as we would like to be treated, I think it does mean discreetly pulling them aside to say, you know, I just wanted you to know so that you could fix it. And I think it's a very loving act, even though it feels awkward.
Well, speaking of maybe awkward, I know the book addresses a bit about employee evaluation systems. What works and what doesn't in most of those systems?
Well, there's, you know, the statistics will tell you that there's not a whole lot that's working, that more than half of employees feel like their review was inaccurate or unfair. And I think that there isn't much that people have to say that says these are helpful. The best review systems that I've seen, and I've seen some good ones, are ones that use that annual review mostly just for evaluation. They don't mix in lots of coaching with it because people can't hear the coaching anyway. And they use it as a conversation for both parties to assess, hey, how's it going? Where are you learning? What were you working on? What was most satisfying to you this year? What would we like to see more of next year? You know, in terms of our expectations, how are you doing? But it's a two-way dialogue, and it's using that as a catalyst for a real conversation rather than, you know, I'll email you your number, and then, you know, we might or might not actually have a real conversation about it.
In fact, when you spoke at the Leadership Summit, you were talking about the ACE, and you, I think you said, what sort of flipped that around, right? To say more about, you know, the way that we can approach others giving good feedback.
Yeah, you know, 93% of American workers surveyed said they felt underappreciated at work. And I often think that underappreciation, the state of underappreciation, is just another description for the word marriage. That we feel taken for granted sometimes, even in the best marriages. So we really should be spending most of our time, day in and day out, appreciating others, letting them feel, you know, seen and heard and valued, and offering suggestions or coaching so that we can all help each other continue to learn and improve how we're working together. And then maybe, you know, 2% or 5% of our time and attention should be spent in evaluation and for very specific purposes, like, hey, is this ready to go out to the customer? Conversations where we just have to do a quick judgment call, or how are we doing together as a team, but that we have a very specific purpose when we do use evaluation.
And then the coaching comes after that point, right? And do we need to be, again, if we're not ready to receive it, can we just say, I'm not ready to receive it? Or, I mean, we don't have that option, right?
Well, it depends on the relationship, of course. I do think if you're topped out and, like, this, I can't take on one more thing to work on, I think sometimes it's better to say that and to actually discuss that than to think it, right, and dismiss the coaching internally because you don't have capacity. Then at least you could have a conversation about, well, if I take this on, I'm not sure I can work over here and to improve this. So what's more important?
We're learning about the science and art of receiving feedback. Well, and we got just a couple minutes left, Sheila. I don't know if there's one or two sort of first steps or things that we can apply today that will really help us receive better feedback in a more helpful way.
Yeah, I'll offer two thoughts. One is that question about what's one thing. Is a really powerful question that allows you to take charge of your learning. And, you know, it doesn't have to come from your boss. You know, go to a coworker or a friend. I asked my kids, what's one thing I could change that would make a big difference to you? And we had really good conversations. I was sure my son would say more screen time. But in fact, he said, you know, more time just you and me going out to dinner, because he and I do that occasionally, but not often enough, according to him. The second thing is just realizing that we all have conflicted feelings about feedback because we have two core human needs. We do want to learn and grow. It's a big piece of what makes life satisfying and what God calls us to do. But we also want to be accepted and loved just the way that we are. And the fact of feedback can suggest, you know, somebody wants a few upgrades, that we're not A-OK the way that we are, and that's really painful. There's no way for that to go away. But I do think it is the place where God's love actually provides us the most comfort.
You'll find some encouragement, practical help, and great insight in the book, Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. It's published on the Penguin label. Sheila Heen has co-written that with Douglas Stone. Her and Douglas have also written the best-selling book, Difficult Conversations. Sheila serves as the founder of the Triad Consulting Group. She lectures at Harvard Law School, and they work with businesses, corporations, nonprofits, ministries, and families to determine what helps us learn and what gets in our way. And Sheila, you've given us some great insight today and some encouragement. And, you know, I can say that it was a great hour. You did really well.
We also just have a new Bible study, eight sessions that accompany the book called Thank God for the Feedback, and it's on Amazon.
All right. Thank God for the feedback. We'll look for it. We can do a link on our website as well. We'll also post our interview up on our show page. So if you missed part of it, you can catch the rest of it, or better yet, pass it on to a friend, just as a way of giving them feedback, perhaps. Anyway, it's myfaithradio.com. Then go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. Sheila Heen joining us today. talking Thanks for the Feedback here on Connecting Faith.